FS Insider, a premium edition of the Financial Sense News Hour.
Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Prytower, and welcome to this edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Joining us on the program today is the Chief Investment Officer for Financial Sense Wealth Management, Chris Paplava. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Chris, today we got a really good employment report. And just 2 months ago in May, we passed the record for the second longest expansion from 1961 to 1969. As you know, if we make it 12 more months, we will have passed the record that was achieved between 1991 to 2001. Now, that's then. This is now. How are things looking right now? I mean, with today's glowing employment report, do you think we stand a chance of beating that record?
I do. If you look at a lot of what you see in terms of employment, employment is at best a coincident indicator. So it's not a leading, but still there's certain things that you can gather from how much momentum is in the economy to determine whether we will slip into recession or not. One of the things that a lot of people were looking at was not only what the jobs growth was going to be, but also the wage inflation data, which was very mild. The reason why they were looking at that was that if it was high, that would tell the Fed, okay, you got to keep raising interest rates and be a little bit more aggressive and potentially flatten or invert the yield curve. So the fact that we had a decent employment report with the lack of wage inflation means that the Fed doesn't have to be overly aggressive. And when the Fed gets overly aggressive, the concern and worry is that they're going to tip us into recession and send financial markets lower. So really, there was not much to complain about today's report. It was actually a really good report. So I think that's why the market is rallying today, despite the news that came out with tariffs against China and possible retaliation, which could have overhanged the market. So for the market to be up this much, I think really speaks to how strong that jobs report was.
So that sounds pretty good. With market returns like that, how long do you think the U.S. markets can continue to buck the trend? I mean, do you think that the U.S. markets will continue for the foreseeable future?
I think we might be coming to a close of that. One of the things that I was looking at, and not everyone, especially investors here in the U.S., may be aware of, was how difficult the first half of the year was globally, not just in equities, but in other asset classes. For example, in the first half of the year, just looking at price, not looking at total return, the MSCI emerging markets were down 7.7%. Developed markets ex-US was down 4.5%. If you look at the debt markets, the JP Morgan Emerging Market Debt Index was down over 8% in domestic currency terms. U.S. investment grade corporate bonds were down over 5%. Long-term treasuries were down over 4%. Again, this is just looking at price, not the income component with total return. And things really got ugly looking at currencies. A lot of emerging market currencies took a beating in the first half of the year. A good example of that was the Argentine peso down over 35%. Turkish lira down over 17% to the dollar. Brazilian real down almost 15%, South African rand almost down 10%, Swedish kroner down over 8%, and even the Australian dollar down over 5%. So when you look globally, it was a very rough half of the year. And even in the U.S., it wasn't that great if you look at the market outside of the FANG stocks being Facebook, Alphabet, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, with especially the real huge move in tech over the last few years. Now, the tech sector makes up 26% of the S&P 500. And at the peak of the tech bubble, the sector was about 35%. So a few years ago, we were at 20% of the S&P for one of the 10 or 11 sectors. And now we're up to 26. I think that kind of speaks to the disproportionate gain that we've seen in the tech sector, where the S&P in the first half of the year was at 1.7, but the Dow, which is a smaller portfolio of holdings and also has a greater emphasis on industrials versus tech, was actually down. So outside of the S&P, especially outside of the tech sector, things were very rough. And I think that eventually the U.S. will catch up to the markets. And part of the reason why I think it hasn't yet has been the huge surge that we've seen in stock buybacks. If you look at the debt markets, as I mentioned to you, U.S. investment grade corporate bonds were down over 5%. but yet U.S. equities were up. And that's because I believe what corporations are doing is they're buying back their stock, not necessarily their debt. So I think they've been a huge support for the year. And as we go into the blackout period ahead, I think some of that buying power in the weeks ahead of us may disappear.
Well, that definitely sobers some of the enthusiasm. Do you think this is a case of Agatha Christie's and then there were none?
I do. And one thing that kind of seems oddly similar to what we're seeing today was what was going on in 2015. Back in that year, the U.S. economy was doing very well. I think our average jobs report, we were adding over 300,000 jobs a month. Housing was finally really kicking into gear after being in the doldrums forever. But outside of the U.S., again, things were looking very dire. The U.S. dollar was undergoing a huge surge that began in 2014. And a lot of that had to do with the U.S. under Ben Bernanke at the helm of the Fed was he ended QE in 2014. And then we are moving towards our first rate hike, which happened later in December of 2015. But outside of us, Europe was still struggling. Asia was struggling. China was going through a slowdown. And so asset returns during that year were really a lot lower than what the S&P was showing, especially anything tied to energy. And with energy collapsing after being in triple digits in 2014, was collapsing on its way towards eventually below $30 a barrel in 2016. So we are seeing stress in the Middle East, stress in the U.S. energy sector, energy defaults were starting to pick up here stateside. So there was a lot of stress. And then eventually, in the summer of 2015, the S&P or the U.S. stock market, it was a case of, and then there was one, and then there was none. When finally the U.S. market rolled over, and what kickstarted that was China. China devalued its currency in the summer of 2015. That led to a global rout in equities, and the U.S. did not escape that. And eventually, we recovered to finish flat for the year. But then in 2016, in January, the Chinese devalued the currency yet again, and that led to a 10% sell-off in January 2016, the worst January in the history of the S&P. So that's something that investors really need to be aware of, is to not just have a domestic focus, but really a global focus. Because even though the U.S. economy may be fine, we saw a good jobs report today, the U.S. economy is doing really well right now. But you have to look at the financial markets. Financial markets really are affected by what happens and what's going on globally. And so I think we do have some stress building internationally that could eventually weigh on the U.S. And again, part of what is keeping the U.S. market afloat is the share buybacks, which I think will really go to the wayside as corporations enter the blackout period and they're prohibited from buying their own stock.
Well, let's talk more about that in terms of what could interrupt this expansion. You've said in the past that bull markets don't just die of old age, they need a catalyst. I hear a lot of people lamenting the trade war and U.S. tariffs on $34 billion in Chinese imports officially came into effect. But what do you, Chris Poplava, think that catalyst will be? And when do you expect them to roll over?
Personally, I think we're going to be seeing that later this month. Again, I think one of the big catalysts is that the share buybacks will be ending. The other thing that we're going to start seeing this quarter is the Fed started withdrawing $10 billion a month in the last quarter of last year. They ramped that up to $20 billion a month beginning in Q1. And starting this month and for the remainder of Q3, they're going to be withdrawing $30 billion or shrinking their balance sheet by $30 billion a month to eventually being ramped up to $50 billion a month by Q4. So the Fed taking liquidity away, the Fed certainly helped on the way up, I think, with providing liquidity and kind of bidding asset prices up. And I think we're going to see a decline in liquidity in the Fed really impacting markets. One of the things that we showed earlier in one of our newsletters earlier this year was a chart put together by Fidelity. And they were looking at the top big four central banks and their 12-month rate of change in their balance sheets. And what they were showing is that tends to lead at least by a year up to 18 months flows into really risky assets. So think of emerging market equities, emerging market debt, and junk bonds here in the U.S. And there was a really strong correlation there. Based on that chart, they were arguing that we would see risky assets come under pressure this year. And if you look at flows coming in or out of those assets, it's nailed it right on the top. We've seen stress in emerging markets. Assets have been leaving emerging market ETFs, mutual funds in mass, as we've seen also in the US junk bond market. And if you look at what's projected to occur with the US Fed continuing to increase the amount that it is shrinking its balance sheet, plus the potential and future ending of the quantitative easing in Europe, we could really see liquidity begin to tighten as we approach later this year. And I think that's going to weigh on asset prices. Two main things that I see as potentially being a catalyst to kind of finally get us to roll over is US corporations entering the blackout period during the Q2 reporting season, which really going to be kicked off this week and next week. But then also the Fed ramping up its balance sheet reduction to, I believe it's $30 billion, $40 billion this quarter. And then it will be eventually ramping up to $50 billion beginning Q4. So I think those are two really big catalysts to kind of really finally take away from the U.S. equity markets.
So I can see how both of those things could really have an impact. So are you calling for the end of the U.S. bull market?
No, I am not. And part of that is, one thing is really to keep in mind is the context of not only the financial markets, but they're tied to the equity markets. When you look at the major bull market tops, they more often than not occur in the context of a recession. So I was just looking at the last two. We had the 2000 market top, and then we eventually had a recession in 2001. We had the 2007 top in October of 2007, and then the eventual recession that began in December of the same year. So the big, nasty bear markets, they typically happen in the context of a recession when the consumer's retrenching, corporate earnings are in decline, and the government is having to shell out more for unemployment insurance claims. And just as a whole, the economy takes a step back. Those are the types of economies or backdrop that really hurt the stock market. Now, that's not to say that you cannot have financial market weakness without a recession. We have some very famous examples of that. Examples being the 1987 stock market crash, where with the market fell north of 20%. So anything over 20% is considered a bear market. We didn't have a recession until 1990, 91, years later. So the market eventually came back. Same thing with the 97 Asian currency crisis, the collapse of long-term capital management in 1998, and the Russian ruble default. We also had the mini bear market in 2011, which was our most recent example, in which the market fell 20% because U.S. debt was downgraded by S&P, where we lost our AAA status. We had the Greek crisis erupt again. And all these examples, the market fell north of 20%, meeting that definition of a bear market. However, there was no recession that ensued thereafter. And so within a year, more often than not, in those types of scenarios, unless you have a recession, the market hits a new high. Because I don't see any sign of recession, at least for the next 12 months, if that top in January was so far the top, and we're going to have another correction in the summer where we either revisit the lows that we saw in February or slightly exceed them. If we don't have a recession, I think the market would recover. And what's interesting too is when you look at where markets are, if we don't have a recession, then often, you know, the market's going to come back. But significant market weakness can actually be a benefit to the stock market in the sense where if it impacts monetary policy. So for example, if we see that market correction this summer causes the Fed to say, you know what, I think we might be nearing the end of our rate raising cycle, or at least we're going to go on pause for an indefinite period to see how things shake out, that would be very bullish for the market. So then the presumption would be the Fed is not going to kill the economy and not kill the bull market, and markets could rally. It is highly unusual for the bull market to end before we even see the Fed end its rate raising cycle. If you look at the last cycle, the Fed stopped raising interest rates in the summer of 2006, which kicked off the, I think, a 25% final year rally in the stock market. I think it's extremely unlikely that the bull market, even if we have a correction this summer, as I anticipate, would be forming a bull market top that we saw in January, mainly because the Fed's not even done raising interest rates and the economy is still humming along just fine. I'm not seeing enough deterioration in the economy, nor am I seeing enough deterioration in the technical health of the market to suggest that any correction that we would have would be the first salvo of a bear market. If anything, I think it's just a correction ongoing bull market. But I think it could finally put that final piece to the puzzle of the end of this bull market, in which it could cause the Fed to go on pause, which then kicks off that explosive euphoric end of a bull market rally going into 2019. If anything, I think this weakness would be a great buying opportunity. What we're doing for our clients is we're looking, creating a shopping list of what we'd like to buy and playing it very defensively in the interim.
So Chris, you mentioned a summertime correction. Now, if you don't expect a current market top now or a recession on the near horizon, for our listeners, when do you think we will have one?
Well, if I'm correct that we do see weakness this summer that causes the Fed to go on pause, what you typically see is when the Fed goes on pause, newest markets tend to lead global markets. So not just economically, but monetarily as well. And then I think what that would lead to is a very significant peak in the U.S. dollar, where we would be signaling, you know, the U.S. Fed is on pause. It's no longer going to increase the spread of short-term U.S. rates over international rates. So yet you still have the other economies that should be coming back from this little growth respite that they're having. I think you're going to see the attractiveness in the other foreign currencies. And so I think the dollar peaking would kick off the final end reflationary boom that you often see. If you remember that typically inflation peaks at the very end of the cycle. In the last cycle, even though the recession began in December of 2007, the CPI year-over-year inflation rate didn't peak until the summer of 2008. That's when oil ramped up to about, I think, $140, $145 a barrel and hit an all-time high. If the dollar peaks, I think that's going to usher in an increase and surge in inflation. We're already starting to see that pick up. I think inflation will continue to build into next year. And I think part of the strength that we've seen in the dollar recently is helping to kind of cool the inflation off a little bit. But if the dollar peaks, I think that could help supercharge inflation, where you've got commodity prices rising. Anything that's anti-dollar would do well. So commodity plays, foreign equities and debt should do well relative to the U.S. And what I think that could do is kind of create this animal spirits, where a weak dollar kind of really boosts risk assets. Plus, it gets animal spirits going with the thought that the Fed is not going to kill the economy. And then you start to see inflation pressures really ramp up into 2019. Now, inflation is a growth tax. Think of it from a corporate standpoint. You're going to see wage inflation hurt your profit margins. You're going to see the cost of goods sold go up in terms of your inputs that you use to sell whatever it is that you're selling. That's going to be going up. We know medical inflation is continuing to heat up. So from a corporate standpoint, I think corporate profit margins will continue to come under pressure, which the market's going to have to deal with going into next year. But also from the consumer standpoint, I think you're going to see continued stress for the consumer at the pump with continued food inflation and other goods inflation, I think is going to build, which then hurts consumers' pocketbooks. So I think we're going to see inflation pressures really begin to take a bite out of the growth of the economy to eventually cool the economy. And if we really start to see that pick up, eventually the economy could slow down enough that the bond market starts to see there could be some economic weakness going into late 2019, early 2020, such that they start buying bonds for the deflationary or disinflationary fears of an economic downturn. So as of right now, I think we're going to see, if I'm correct, the Fed go on pause later this year. I would not be surprised if 2018 marks the end of the Fed rate raising cycle that began in 2015, and it could cap the cycle for this expansion. But again, I think inflationary pressures will build into 2019. It could be kind of the final nail in the coffin that eventually kills the economy and the bull market, that we might have a recession late 2019 at the earliest, going into 2020 with the stock market peaking sometime in 2019.
Well, thank you, Chris. We've been speaking with Chris Poplava, the Chief Investment Officer for Financial Sense Wealth Management. Chris, before you go, would you tell our listeners the best way to contact you about Financial Sense Wealth Management services, or maybe even to discuss some of the things you've mentioned on this program?
Absolutely. They can email me at chris.poplava@financialsense.com, or they can call me at our toll-free number, which is 888-486-3939.
Chris, thank you for your insight. That was Chris Poplava, Chief Investment Officer for Financial Sense Wealth Management. And we do want to thank all of our listeners for listening today, and we do hope you have a good rest of your weekend.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.